3 weeks in, 3 wins for your Iowa Hawkeyes. 3-0, ranked 5th in the country. And there's always things to work on, but can we just be happy? Let's all be happy Hawkeyes, right? 3-0, couple big wins, top 10 team. Stuff to work on. We'll talk about it, but let's have a day. Let's go.
Shit, boys and girls, 250 episodes of the Washed Up Walk-Ons podcast, and I'm still alive, not canceled. Nobody's come to the doorstep to burn the house down. This is some kind of a miracle that we're still on the airwaves coming to you guys in the year 2021. But that's a truly beautiful thing because you are all very beautiful people, the Washed Up Walk-Ons army that comes to us twice a week to listen to our banter about a Hawkeye team that is 3-0 and about, this is about the best time of any of our lives, because when the Hawks are going good in the midst of football season, everything just feels right with the world. Kluver, what do you got for these fine people this afternoon?
Well, I know. Kevin's in the car. He is not turn signal Kevin. He said this today because he's not going to be making any turns. Kev, what are you, like an hour out of Iowa City right now?
Just passing the exit to get on to Muscatine, to get towards Muscatine on I-80. So
don't go
about
there.
40 minutes or so.
Don't go there.
You know what? Just go there and go visit my mother. She would be tickled pink.
Nothing in Muscatine.
You know what? Since you refused to come back and visit your mother, maybe I should go visit your mother.
Oh, that's good.
Dude, I'm staying in your house and not that many weeks, but you're just not going to be there.
Yeah, I know. It's a shame.
You're going to stay in Kevin's place, but he isn't going to be home?
Yeah, man. He knows me as a reliable homeowner.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I gave him a few rules, and he knows the deal.
Okay. Oh, boy. Oh, wow. All right. Quickly, shout out to those who do it for us. Again, Drake mentioned we're not canceled, but we're not only not canceled, but we're on the come up somehow, some way, partially due to the Walk-On Army. We want to quickly mention, and we got a couple interesting Patreon names this week. We've got Paul Malty Sweetness, Trevor Corey, Crankhead TV, Cooper, RJ, Dale, Matt, Emily Wieskamp, by the way, part of the Walk-On Army. Who is that?
Love to see it.
That is a very good friend of mine from all the way back in who knows when, dude. We've probably known each other since...
Is that Joe's sister?
2002, and that is Matt, his older brother's wife.
Wife, okay. All right. I knew that. Not many Wieskamps.
And she is the... I know she holds every record that can be held at Western Illinois for a point guard in women's basketball.
So she's elite.
She has conference records and Division I AA records for being unbelievable at basketball. Shout out M. Wheezy, dude. John Wall, she'll understand that reference.
So that family is just, they get together and they just fucking compete is what they do.
Bruh.
That's all they do.
Dude.
Also Josh, Eric, Garrett, Ken, and Andy. Thank you guys.
How many patrons do we have, dude?
Getting up to numbers that I can't count to, brother. Yeah, so that is the army. It's growing. And this week on the army, I'm definitely going to be breaking down a little Torrey Taylor hitting the pylon, some Terry Roberts destroying people at the gunner position. Potentially... And I haven't watched all the footage on him, so this is sort of just based off of his big plays. But the plays that Terry Roberts has made at the gunner position, and then he actually got in at DB as well in this Kent State game, I'm willing to put him up there with probably a top five gunner since Bob Sanders. I mean, he's making those kinds of plays. I know that we had a really good gunner. What was that guy's name? Gavin?
Number 35, Gavin.
Gavin Williams?
Gavin Smith?
Gavin Smith?
Gavin Smith.
Yep. Yeah. Gavin that, Smith.
I see Gavin at the hospital every now and then. He does kind of what I do for different companies.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's a good guy. Still
That is a guy who, you would have to be
That's right. A guy that nobody knows.
Nobody.
But was a difference maker on our punt team.
Dude, absolutely. Talk about knowing your role and just giving everything you could to one thing. He played as many snaps as I did. In fact, he played less snaps than I did because he wasn't out there on PAT field goals. So the guy was out there for six plays a game and he won almost every time. There wasn't a corner.
That's not true. He was on kick return and kickoff too.
Oh, did he play those as well? I thought he was only a gunner, but that probably doesn't make sense. He was probably on kickoff as well. Anyway, 30-7 win over Kent State looked a little bit less controlled than we would have liked for a while there. In fact, it got real dicey before the defense came up with another turnover. Could have been a whole different game there in the second part of that third quarter. But the Hawks end up controlling the game, winning 30-7 and handling the Kent State Golden Flashes, of which their opposing crowd, their fans, I sat right in front of, and that was interesting. You ever just see the life?
Was there any smack talk from the Golden Flash fans, or what was the dynamic there?
No, I think they were just happy to be there. I don't know. There wasn't too many of them. Most of them that were there were parents, I am guessing, looked like. There was one lady who's just that lady in the stands, and everyone who is listening right now has that person that sits by them. Hey, it might even be you who stands up and in a stadium of 65,000 people yells something really like personal and motivating, and for some reason thinks that the players are going to hear them and they're really going to try harder or do the thing that they said. Right. I mean, otherwise they're very nice. They're respectful. It was when the fumble happened and Moss picked it up and that whole thing kind of went down. I just turned around and looked, and it was like, I think what their faces looked like what ours probably did when Michigan State reached the ball over the goal line in the Big Ten championship. Probably not as bad, but the wind was taken out of them. Let's just say that they were hurt because, yeah, we'll get there. Some initial thoughts by you two, anything that popped out, just your reaction to the game, just your first thought about the Kent State game. Any ideas?
I love seeing the D line get some pressure on the quarterback.
Wow. That was
awesome to see.
That was
what we needed, man. That's like the last key to that defense right there. If that is something we can do all year long, watch out.
Yeah, I agree. Drake?
All right, I'm about to ask or say something that could be controversial, and I'm going to defer to Kevin and his expertise, and he could tell me I'm an idiot and don't know anything about playing defensive back. But do we have a little bit of underperformer at free safety?
No.
You don't think so?
No.
Who's our free? No. Is it Kayvon?
Yeah.
So no. Jack Strong?
Jack Turner's the free safety.
Oh, no. Then I meant strong safety. I'm sorry.
Okay. I wouldn't consider him an underperformer. No. No, I'm just going to say no. Okay.
Are we referencing when...
I just have watched him over the past few games, and I feel like he's the one part of our defensive backcourt that's not as... impressive, or like, I don't know. I have a little less faith, and I don't know if that's warranted or not. So if it's not, I'll just stop right there.
I mean, yeah, you're talking about he's back there at 3-4 other dudes that are straight up dudes now. So to say you're at the bottom rung of that group is not diminishing whatsoever.
Yeah, it by no, I don't think Drake is by any means saying that he's a bad player. Just not.
I just know he's a freak athlete. Yeah. And I just don't necessarily see freak athleticism right like on the film.
Sure. I think you would like to see him be able to pull the trigger a little bit quicker sometimes, I think. I could acknowledge that, sure.
Okay. I like that. Hey, we gotta be honest with ourselves, right? There's a lot of people trying to pick
our defense is really, really good, and it's carrying our team right now. Yeah. And if our offense could be 75% as good as our defense for the entirety of the year, we would be a really, really lethal football team.
Dangerous.
So, like, I very well understand the offense is the low point, but I've just been watching, and I wanted to address that question right now.
Yeah. Okay. So, obviously, Riley Moss was fantastic in the first couple of weeks, and the whole defense was. And versus Kent State, you saw for the first time, not the first time, that play before the half at Iowa State, that hurt. But you saw for the first time Riley Moss get beat. The first one was a one-on-one. I'm going to refer to Kevin on this one as well. Kevin's kind of the resident defensive guy here. And I don't know if he even saw the second play. The second one looked like Riley passed off and was going to play underneath.
It 100% looked like he did not have any plans of carrying one deep.
Right. And then Kayvon wasn't there. And so, Kevin, do you have any opinion on that play?
Wish I could. I did not see that play in particular.
Okay.
I was predisposed for that touchdown. I come back, look at my phone, and there's a touchdown.
Okay.
But what it sounded like happening is a miscommunication.
Yeah, and so I read
tell you who's at fault without looking at the play.
And I, of course, this is Twitter conversation, and most of it is BS. But I was reading a conversation between a person and John Miller, I believe, who looked like he knew what he was talking about. And he said it looked like it just ended up being a good call against the defense that we were running. They had Kayvon's attention somewhere else, and he just couldn't get there quick enough. And Riley was supposed to be playing underneath. So I don't know. Obviously we don't just let, there's no defense where you just let guys run down the side of the field wide open. So someone has to be on that guy. But you know, we kind of saw a lack of communication there or whatever it may be. And it ended up being that they score 7 points in the game. And it was just off of, you know, that was 40 or 50 yards of it. Right. It wasn't the only time that Riley got beat. There was probably three plays where he was caught, you know. What I will say is it doesn't make any, you know, Riley isn't all of a sudden just like, you know, back to average DB or whatever. Riley's still a dog. They have players too. That was their best receiver. He was against him one-on-one. That guy right there is probably going to lead the MAC or at least be at the front of the MAC this year in receiving yards. As one of the better receivers, that quarterback is a good veteran quarterback for them. I mean, this is an offense that for the last 2 years averaged about 450 yards of offense per game. And we're scoring like 40 some points over the last 2 years. So they were putting up ridiculous.
And the Wash of Walk-Ons called the under and smoked it.
Oh yeah. The under was the easy, easy pick. And before we get into any more of the game breakdown, let's actually go over the awards winners for the week. Kev, I want to start with you. How about the Bama Florida over?
Hit it by a mile, baby. Never a sweat.
A mile or a half point. Either way, it's a win. 59.5, the final score, 31-29. Alabama squeaking by the Florida Gators. Florida plays Bama tough. They play them tougher than anybody else.
I don't think Bama's invincible this year either.
I don't either.
I you know what I'm gonna circle is that Bama Ole Miss game. I think is gonna be a potential.
I don't think
Bama to have to go over.
I don't think Bama can beat Georgia. I don't think anybody in the country can beat Georgia's defense right now.
Mm. So you think there's potential Alabama's 10-2 in the regular season here?
I wasn't even thinking about Ole Miss because Ole Miss offense is banana land.
I know this. I think they lose one They lose one somewhere.
Yeah, I think they lose one as well.
I'm not sure. Do they play Georgia in the regular season this year?
They would have to play them in the SEC championship, theoretically.
I don't know if they play them during the regular season.
I don't know if they play them in the crossover game or not.
Let me click on this here, and let me just – I'll figure that out. But close one. So Kevin ekes out the over there, one for one. Kev, how did Pitt do?
Not good. So okay. They – what's the final score? They lost to Western Michigan, like 44-41, something like that.
Yeah.
And I knew Pitt was going to put up some points. What I didn't know is that they weren't going to be able to stop a MAC team from scoring.
Right, like Iowa did.
Exactly. I think they turned the ball over. They lost turnovers like 3-0, so it's hard to win like that. But so that was a tough one to swallow. You know, they scored as many points as they needed to cover, but their defense just laid an egg right after. Imagine this. You come off an SEC road win, mm-hmm. come home and lose to a MAC team. Explain that to me.
I don't think I can. I don't think I can explain that. And that's, you know, Kev, you got on the call here and you're like, man, I'm just so happy that football's back. You know, we're 2-3 weeks into this thing. That's football right there, man. Tell you what. It's football.
That's football. You got to play the game.
And
not show up to play the game.
And your last pick, the Northwestern Duke under 49.5.
Dude, Northwestern's trash. Northwestern is not a good football team.
They are bad. And they tried to make a comeback. It was at one point 21-0, and then the final score was what, 30-21?
30-23, I believe, actually.
Okay. So just over.
Yeah, it was like 30-20 with like halfway through the third quarter, so I kind of stopped paying attention.
Yeah.
And apparently their defense actually came alive for the last quarter and a half, but yeah, it was like 21-0 real quick in that game. And I'm just like, what the hell is going, what happened to Northwestern's defense? They've always had a good defense.
It's wild to me how much of a difference year to year that program has gone through. Cause they've done this the other way as well, where they were like very average. And then the next year they come back and they win the Big Ten West. Right.
Right.
So it's
3 games into the year, I'm not too worried when we roll over to Northwestern.
Yeah. I have, you know, I did the power rankings this past week on Friday before the games went, and I power ranked Northwestern at 12th in the Big Ten, just ahead of Nebraska at 13 and Illinois at 14. I am going to struggle
Nebraska
with
Nebraska is definitely better than 13, and I hate to say that.
Yeah, they're probably going to move up to 11th or 10th in the rankings. It's going to be a battle for 14 between Illinois and Northwestern this week, and I think Northwestern's going to take that spot. They're bad. Anyway, so Kevin goes 1-2 on the day. Kluver goes 1-2 as well, and I started off real poor. Maryland had to win against Illinois in Champaign by a last-second field goal, 20-17. Maryland does not cover 7.5. Then the Oklahoma Sooners start the day, and as Drake just alluded to, Nebraska looking better than they did the first 3 weeks. They have a defense that can actually keep them in the game, maybe. Oklahoma did not play clean or, you know, the way that they wanted to. It was a minus 22 line. It wasn't even close. But then Penn State did save me on the day. Penn State wins in Happy Valley in a big time game that it looks so lit there. I don't know if you guys caught shots of that game or got to watch it all.
Oh yeah,
dude. I mean, so Kaylee had never
college football right there, man. I would have loved to be there for that game.
Yeah.
Great game for the Big Ten as well.
Kaylee had never seen Happy Valley at night before. She's a Hawk fan, but you know how it is.
Not that deep.
Yeah, she doesn't understand stadiums and things like that. And when she saw the pregame, you know how they do a pretty good job on the broadcast of showing the stadium and everything. When she saw that, she was like, dude, I should have gone to Penn State.
Well, I'll –
yeah. I will admit, when they're playing Zombie Nation and then they go, "We are Penn State," it's pretty cool.
It's one of the best. When it's a whiteout at night in Happy Valley, it's a top three. It's a no doubt top three college football environment. I've never been to the SEC.
It's number one. There's no way that anything in the SEC beats that because it's like the biggest stadium in the country. 110,000 is as big as it gets.
It's true.
And those people, they don't have anything else, dude.
It's true.
State College, it's in the middle of nowhere. That's not the place you want to do anything other than go to football games and be unbelievably reckless with those hooligans.
It brought back the memories of when we went there in 2016. Obviously not a great day for the Hawks or the walk-ons that day. And
no, I just would have liked that to have been like a close game to be able to like experience the atmosphere.
Right.
Better, you know?
Like a fierce intensity throughout the entire game. Whereas when we went there, I believe it was a whiteout, right? It was a whiteout at night.
It was a whiteout. Yeah. But that game was just about over at halftime.
It was just not nearly as competitive as Auburn made it this weekend. And so, man, playing there and being able to experience that and knowing that it could be even better, like it was this weekend, I would highly recommend trying to find yourself to a Penn State night football game at some point in your life. It's crazy. That being said, they saved me. They won 28-20. -5 was the line. So Tyler goes 1-2. Kevin goes 1-2. Drake goes 2-1. You want to talk about those picks, Drake?
I mean, the Hawks we already talked about.
Easy under.
A pretty easy pick. And then, unfortunately, I was wrong about the Fighting Jameis Saints.
Yeah.
And he's not as, I guess, reliable as we would like. So
I think Packers defense is trash, and that's what he just exploited last week.
Yeah, I think you're right. Houston, good pick by Drake. It actually got close to the line, but shouldn't have. Tyrod Taylor got hurt, but up until that point, they were what KF likes to call humming. And the Texans look better than I think anybody expected, but obviously I think it kind of hangs in the balance with Tyrod's health. So the walk-ons go 4-5 overall. Not great, but not as bad as week one. So we're just below 500 as a group. And if you're betting with us.
Yeah, where were you at this week? What'd you do wrong? What was your assessment?
I don't know, man. I'm just going to start betting the Hawks and the under because we're 3-0 ATS and 3-0 to the under. So maybe I'm just going to do that every week now.
True, dude. I mean, the Hawks defense is something else, boys. It's just like a
– until you can beat our defense, we're just going to keep talking shit because somebody's going to have to prove that they can score more than 17 points on us.
Yeah, and you know what it's not going to be, and I don't want to put the cart in front of the horse here, but it's not going to be Colorado State. They played Toledo this weekend. They got like 200 yards of offense. They could not score in the red zone. I think they kicked 5 field goals. And they scored 1 touchdown. They ended up beating Toledo like 22-9 or something weird like that. So, you know, this upcoming.
That's interesting because Toledo played Notre Dame really tough the week before.
Yeah. And Purdue actually hung around with Notre Dame. Didn't they play Notre Dame last night?
They did, but they ended up losing 27-13. It was close through about 3 quarters and Notre Dame ended up pulling away.
And Notre Dame, I think, has Wisconsin this week. So they're going to get a...
Notre Dame's got a schedule. They got Wisconsin, and then they got Cincinnati, and I think they got Virginia Tech the following week. So Notre Dame's got a little bit of a rough schedule coming up.
When you don't have a conference, you got to go schedule games to make sure your resume's all right, you know? Cincinnati, I think Indiana might have beat Cincinnati, man, if they didn't get screwed on a roughing the passer call. Man,
that targeting call changed the game.
Or the targeting
call. They ended up scoring a touchdown on that drive before the half. and they lose one of their best defenders. And I feel like an old man just yelling at a TV screen, but this targeting call is it's ruining the game. What they've morphed targeting into. They've changed it from the egregious hits to like anytime anyone gets hit in the head. Like, we wear helmets for a freaking reason. I don't know what to do. That one targeting call against the Auburn player against Penn State, the dude scores a touchdown right there if the guy doesn't, like,
yeah, what's he supposed to do?
So I don't know. Like, I would love for the coaches, athletic directors to get together and like, hey, we are trying to keep players safe, but this isn't football anymore. Like, let's get this right.
What we're seeing is the problem with targeting is not the fact that there is good intent, right? It is a rule that is based off safety, similar to some of the kickoff rules and the wedge rule and all that stuff. The problem is it's not actually limiting anything from happening. And that is because football, we've with this specific rule, we have crossed over the line of we're messing with the purity of what football is, right? What tackling another human being is. When you tackle a person, your head is going to make contact with part of their body. And if you line up perfectly with them, it's going to be up around their neck, shoulders, head area. Like, that's just the way tackling works. And when it's bang, bang, when it's in the middle of a high intensity game, people are flying around, especially the worst one is when the offensive player ducks his head to brace for contact. In a quarter second, the defender does not have a chance to suddenly like pull his neck back, but then continue with his momentum for it. It just doesn't work. The rule does not line up with how you actually form tackle. I think it actually could make things more dangerous, because if defenders are flying around and they're thinking about like, they start to think about, I have to tackle differently. When you start to change what's natural, that's when somebody gets hurt. So,
right. And then it's just like good, hard physical plays, like a running back out in space, not like a defenseless, receiver going up for a ball. Like, why are we? I don't know. I hate what's happening to the game. Absolutely hate it. And the ejection rule is just ridiculous. Like, these are not people trying to hurt each other. They're just trying to play the fucking game.
And yeah, I'll give it to the fans for that one.
They're pussifying the game horribly. And it's just getting worse. And it's like they're actually trying to appeal to the soccer moms who are afraid of their middle schoolers getting CTE.
Yeah.
Like, shut up and let's go back to you got jacked up.
I'm all about making it safe within reason. But the issue here is that we're going to get to a spot where we figure out, or where it becomes very apparent, that football is just a violent game. It just is, right? And right.
I understand why the rule originally came into place, like getting rid of, the receivers laying out for a ball and some safety,
yeah,
looking his chop, taking a shot on a guy. But believe me, that was fun back in the day. But yeah, I can understand taking that stuff out of the game. But what it's become is just intolerable to watch.
Have you guys seen the best, without really digging into it, I think the best rule change proposed that I've seen, and I think it was Kirk Herbstreit or somebody week one that proposed this, was like, we have to make it a targeting one and a targeting two. One being, okay, 15-yard penalty, but we're not kicking the guy out. And that's when it's something like the Penn State, or it's clearly not malicious. It's not on purpose that they led. They're not trying to hurt this person. And then, yeah, of course, if some dumbass like Vontaze Burfict wants to try and decapitate people, right, then we can have targeting two and you can throw them out of the game. But I think targeting one, targeting two would at least make more sense. And man, I'm not sure what the answer is. I mean,
the way NFL does it is they just call unnecessary reference penalty 15 yards and right. We keep playing.
Yeah, I think that's a better way to do it, to be honest. I'm not a
boys, and these roughing the passer penalties, Kevin is actually on the right track calling it intolerable because it is really close to just not even being able to stomach what they're putting on the field.
Yeah.
Dude, I don't know how a defensive lineman is supposed to bring a guy to the ground but like not fall on him.
I think Iowa got one this weekend, and I didn't have a good view of it because the Hawks were coming towards my side of the field, and I was looking at the pass downfield, I think, but it was a one that should not have been called. But who knows? Back to Alabama playing Georgia. They do not have Georgia in the regular season this year, so they'll play Southern Miss this week, Ole Miss next week. Ole Miss is probably, you know, Arkansas looks good. They have Arkansas the second to last week of the season, Auburn in the last week in the Iron Bowl. But you know,
I'd circle that Ole Miss game. Ole Miss's offense is firing all cylinders, and they actually have a defense this year. And they look, I watched them the first two games. They played pretty physical.
You know whose offense is firing on all cylinders is Michigan State. Where did that come from? Have you guys seen what the scores that they're putting up?
Well, they have like a completely different team this year. They brought in like 30 dudes off transfer.
Well, whoever they brought in, it's working because, and who knows how good they truly are, but they'll enter the rankings this week and handle a ranked Miami team at Miami, I think. So
that is one mess out of them, right?
Yeah. What was that, Kev?
I said that is correct. Yep. Ranked Miami at Miami, which yeah. I don't know if Miami should have been ranked. I think they're overrated, but still a good win.
How about Florida State and their inability to even win one football game?
Are they haven't won yet?
They're 0-3.
Oh, that's bad. That's bad. They've come a long way since the days of Jameis.
Come a long way in the wrong direction.
Wrong direction.
Imagine being 0-3, 8 years removed from winning a national title.
That's wild. I mean, I don't know how you would think that you could recruit off of that hype and that momentum, and it would at least carry you for a decade or more, but I guess not. Kevin, you know what I like is the last couple of weeks on Thursdays when we've put out picks, and then posted them a day later on Thursday, Beef he's chiming in with his bet of the week. He's calling it the old man bet of the week. I dubbed it the Beef bet of the week, and people like that, the Beef bet of the week.
Well, he's 1-1 so far. Nevada did not live up to his hype.
I think
they ended up getting beat by Kansas State by like two touchdowns or something like that.
I might have to add a little graphic with like a little steak and call it the beef
definitely
bet of the week.
We should add beef to our graphic.
Yeah, we're going to have to. So, Mr. Ward, if you're listening, you're part of the graphic now. Congratulations. Because these two games, Kent State and Colorado State, probably more than any, well, that's not true. There's a couple, I'd put Kent State up probably against a few of those teams at the bottom right now, but could be considered a trap game. We played two really hyped up weeks of games. One of the questions from a fan on Twitter, listener on Twitter said, how does KF go about, and I don't know if they meant KF specifically or just coaches in general, how do they go about instilling that one game at a time mentality? Like, what does that actually look like? And how do they get that through to the guys? Do you guys have any good input on that? I mean, I have an answer, but.
Was it not one game at a time to y'all in high school?
Of course it was.
Because, I was really excited for every single game in high school, and that mentality just carried over to college. Like,
do you think it's a disconnect between the fans and the players? I think it's a disconnect between the fans and the players.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, everybody just really wants to play football, and we're a good team right now, so that makes them want to do it even more. And that makes getting up in the morning and lifting on Tuesday mornings when you're still sore from the game and you don't want to hit each other Tuesday afternoons, like, it makes it more worth it.
Yeah. I think that...
It's actually a high school comment. I actually kind of look forward to the cupcake games a little bit more because it's just fun to beat the piss out of someone.
Yeah, and there was no targeting rules back then, so Kevin was just taking souls in the secondary.
If you look at my high school highlight tape, there's a few plays that would have targeting on them.
Okay. Sure. You know, I think
going back to high school, you guys will appreciate this. Just a funny story. My coach, my senior year, had to directly tell me to stop horse collaring people because he knew I was doing it on purpose when I got frustrated that somebody on our defense like screwed up a play and I had to go run to the sideline and tackle the guy for like a 12-yard gain. I just got pissed and horse collared him.
Wow. That's incredible.
I'll take things I'm not surprised about, Drake, for 500, please.
For 5 million, please. Yeah. So here's what I think. I think those on the outside, and I want you to, as the listener, to think about the thing in your life that you've given the most effort to. Maybe it was school. Maybe you were a nerd and you just really liked getting a 4.0, or that was your thing. Maybe
by the way, being a nerd is super cool.
Yeah,
that's all I strive to be now, is trying to get nerdy in as many ways as possible, because knowledge is sweet.
You know, maybe it's your career right now. Maybe it was, you know, maybe you were a college athlete and you sort of understand it. The intensity of the focus, right? There just is no room for these guys to wake up tomorrow morning and say, yeah, I know we got Colorado State, but I wonder how Maryland's doing. We should check in on Maryland. Like, they just don't give a shit. There's just no reason to do that, right? One, because they know it's coming, right? It's not like they're not going to get their time on Maryland. They're going to get that next week. But two, as a player, look across the country. How many teams will go undefeated this year in college football? Not very many. Maybe none, right? There's a possibility that none do. So that right there demonstrates how hard it is to win. That means everyone's going to lose. Everybody can lose a game, and knowing how hard it is to week in, week out, go put your 11 up against their 11 and just be better. Just make sure that they know that you're better. It's a big deal. It doesn't matter if it's against Kent State or Colorado State. You get 12 opportunities. And so if you come away on a Sunday, like they did today, with a win in that, and then in the win column, a check in the win column, that's huge. Doesn't matter who it's against. And so knowing that, then going into weeks, you feel completely invigorated to give a full effort. For the fans, oftentimes we just rely on paper, right? Okay, who has this team played? What have they done? Do they have any star players? Are we supposed to beat these guys? Because if we're supposed to win and it's not like a 3-point line, like an Iowa State line or whatever, then I think fans do get this assumption that, like, or maybe they make the connection of us being supposed to win and how easy actually winning that football game is. They don't correlate. And so, yeah, for you guys watching, maybe it's not as exciting, the Colorado State, the Kent State, but playing is just as cool. I don't know.
I mean, anytime you're going out on the field to try to win a football game, like, it's a lot of fun. Now, back to your question, like, maybe Drake, you can speak on this too, being a fellow position player. I wouldn't even know how to look for past one game towards the next game. Because
are you saying that as a specialist, I could just look at whatever the fucking game I want?
Yes, that's exactly what we're saying.
Yeah, you're right. I basically can't.
Ping pong and basically fingered each other.
Wow. Oh, okay. You weren't supposed to see that, but.
But what I'm saying is, like, the whole week is structured around game day. Mm-hmm. And this being Colorado State week, you're only going to be watching films Colorado State. You're only going to be practicing plays by Colorado State. There's no way to look forward to Maryland. Like, Colorado State this week. I truly don't understand how any player would be able to look forward to a next week.
I was not even close to smart enough to look forward to the next week because, for one, my position was a dumbass position, and you don't have to, like, look forward to anything. You just know what the defense is going to look like, and you do the same thing over and over again. Like, there's very little variation.
I think Monty might be changing that.
Which, let's not get into it.
Dude.
Let's not talk about it.
He's getting passes thrown to him.
I'm getting ass hurt more and more as I watch him play. They're letting the guy go out there and have a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And it's starting to make me really have resentment towards Brian Ferentz.
Of what could have been.
Uncle Brian and I just don't want to have a beef with him, you know. But he's really doing Monty a lot of favors out here. And I think Brady and I have some legitimate beef. Where was I going with this whole tangent?
I don't know.
Looking forward to the next.
Oh, playing a dumb position. Yeah.
Yeah. And secondly, like, I don't understand what I'm looking at. Unless Brian's up at the front of the room with the clicker telling us exactly why this is going to do this and this, I don't even know what I'm looking at, man. I was half a village idiot. So
I think part of it too is what's the fans think about when they think about the don't look ahead or don't get caught in a trap game is the fans have all this time to fantasize about what could be this year, including us, right? Like, we're on the podcast, we're the noise. We are doing our best to not talk about what could be of this team. And when you do that and you fantasize, you automatically chalk up most of the games and you just look at the hardest ones. So if it's not Wisconsin on the schedule that's left, or it's not Penn State for Iowa right now, those are probably your two hardest games left on the schedule. If it's not those two teams, in your mind, as a from the fan perspective, not just you guys too, us, if we were to think about it this way, you just chalk every other game up as a win, right? Where as a player, it's actually your responsibility to go make sure that it's a win, right? So there is no thinking of the other teams, right?
Exactly. And I'll finish off with this. KF would always say you have to respect the amount of work and effort it takes to win at this level.
Yeah.
Like, you don't walk into any stadium and beat anyone just without any preparation, just on talent alone at this level. It's not possible.
Yeah.
The guys across the field, they're on scholarship too. The coaches across the field, they're getting paid pretty damn good money too. You really have to respect the amount of work it takes in every week to win a football game.
Yeah.
And I'll say this as well, is I think our coaching staff did a really good job of hyping up the other team.
Yes.
I remember we were 3-0 in 2015. And we had North Texas coming into town.
Oh, my God. It was so high. He hyped that way up, dude.
And Coach Wallace.
Bro, it was Dan McCarney.
Because Dan McCarney was coaching the other team, and Coach Wallace was with the DBs at the time, and him and Phil are talking about how their receiver is the top receiver in the country right now. He had the most reception yards in the country. We're like, oh shit, we gotta be on our stuff right now. So, like, and we ended up beating them by 60 points, but you know, they were just really good at us buying into how we had to be very detailed this week, because you never know.
The staff had me convinced we were going to be in a dogfight that week. I was fooled. I think you are right though, Kevin, even though it's disrespectful, which is, you know, we're just used to it. And honestly, let's just put it out there. The specialists at this point, we deserve the disrespect. And Gersonde's bringing that on.
I'm glad that you segued into this, pal, because somebody else needed to.
Here's the deal. There's seven home games where guys get to lead that walk down the tunnel, right? The tunnel's only about four guys wide. There's probably 15 seniors, right? So you get, you know, you probably get two times up at the front. Well, guess what, Gersonde, you got your time. Hey, buddy. I understand.
As someone who never led the swarm out of the tunnel, I can say that you should probably have played at least one meaningful snap before doing that.
I don't want
to
get
mean, my opinion has been voiced on this podcast. I feel like I don't have to shit down the kid's neck anymore.
This is it's very superficial because it really is all about aesthetic here, right? Usually football players, we don't give a shit what we look like. We don't care. Iowa football literally is about not being sexy, right? Although the defense is pretty darn attractive this year. But Iowa football is don't be sexy, be functional, win games. Maybe you don't, you know, KFU also used to always say, oh, Penn State, they're going to look pretty fucking good, okay? They're going to have the 5 stars. Kulik, we put you out there next to Jahan Dotson. He's going to look better than you, right? They got mannequins playing for them. But the Swarm is literally only about aesthetic. It is how it looks. It's optics. And Ryan, I'm speaking to you. I have, you know, we're boys because we played together. He, you know, I wouldn't call him my best friend, but Ryan, we're friends. We were teammates. We were in the same room. At this point, you probably had your two walks, man. It's probably time to let Monty take it. And I know that it's not a thing where you're like, hey, who wants to come take the front? But just like, like Kevin said, have a little bit of awareness. I don't know. It doesn't look good. I did it one time and I felt extremely embarrassed to be in the front. And in hindsight now, at least I had big arms. Like I had, you know, I took up space horizontally, not vertically, but horizontally. And Gersonde just looks like we threw pads on a manager and we walked him out there to like make him feel good. I don't know. That's all I have to say on that. We're not going to stick on it any longer. Again, not a whole lot to break down. What we did do, Kevin mentioned that the defensive line got involved here. Most sacks in a game by the Iowa Hawkeyes. We've had some pretty good D lines. Most sacks in a game by an Iowa Hawkeye football team since 2000. 7 sacks in one game. We only had 2 in the first game. Hopefully that balances out. I'd like to see 2 or 3 a game, what we're averaging now. And Van Valkenburg is on his horse. Joe Evans is playing hard. I think we got 9 guys in on meaningful defensive line reps. So I think we made a lot of improvement there. The back 7, they gave up a few, but they're pretty solid. Offensively, we ran for 200 and some yards. T. Good had 150 yards on 22 carries, 3 touchdowns, right? One of the things we talked about was the Hawks got to get the run game going. And I think they did that. Shooter got some reps. The one area that the Hawks are still a little bit lagging in is our passing game, which involves Spencer
Peters. Not our passing game to our tight ends, though, dude. Our tight end passing game is strong. Not as strong as it's been in the past few years because we had 2 first-round draft picks. But for the young guys that we have in there, they're doing a damn good job.
Yeah, Laporte is doing great.
And 85 is doing a good job, too.
And Lachey is, too. Petrus is clearly the most comfortable throwing to his tight ends.
I think it's because they consistently get the most open. Right?
I was just going to say,
run routes that are like they're get open routes. Mm-hmm. Guys like Henry Kruger Coble, not an amazing athlete, got open all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Because in our offense, we have some real good tight end get open routes where they don't have to go beating the best defenders that the other team has to offer.
And so this poses the question, Drake, and I'm really actually curious on your. Kevin, you may have less of an opinion because you're a defensive guy. And the answer here could be sort of negative or grim if it is what it is. I don't think it's this. But the question is then, okay, do our wide receivers not have the ability to get open? Is it Spencer? Or is this a system thing? Do we not have the right route trees to get our receivers open? If we can get our tight ends open, are we not running the right plays to get our receivers open? Or is it the receiver's ability? And then a lot of this because people don't know the...
I would just say that I don't think it's a receiver's inability to get open. It's just you have to kind of cater to what your receivers do best. And like Amir was extremely fast, and Brandon Smith was extremely big, and he was pretty damn fast to go along with it. So like they had two pretty unique skill sets that Iowa wide receivers don't have that often, and we actually threw the ball down the field a lot more when we had those guys than we have so far this year. Yeah, we don't have like an absolute deep threat guy to throw the ball to, and that's okay. Cause like, if you remember what I said before the Iowa State game, our offense should not be dropped back and trying to throw the ball down the field by route concepts. Yeah. I think our shot plays should come off of play action, because I'm hoping that our run game is so strong that a defense just absolutely has to sell out to stop us running the ball. Cause that's how Iowa is the most successful. Doesn't matter who your quarterback is or your receivers, unless you just take the conglomeration of all the best receivers we've ever had and put them on the field at the same time and go tell them to play 7-on-7 and get open. Like, that's just not the way I was ever built. Brian didn't try and form his offense with plays that are just go get open in the backyard type things,
right,
with deep long route concepts. It's just not how we're built. And people shouldn't expect for that to be how the offense runs. Now, it can definitely run more efficiently with the big shot plays. And I think that our guys can and will make more big plays down the season. Spencer just stepping back and throwing it, but it's going to come from the run game, I think.
I agree. And as an offensive coordinator, what do you try to do? You try to get the ball in the hands of your best players. Well, who's our best player on offense? The guy sitting in the backfield there. I would like to see us try to get Tyrone Tracy the ball out in space a little bit more, but yeah, you want to feed your guys.
Yeah, I hear
it. Guys, it's T Good, it's Tracy, and it's Laporta.
Yeah. So for fans looking for the answer here, and because most fans don't understand how a offense is built around certain play sets and route trees and schemes. And a lot of fans don't really pay attention to, on a play in play out basis, if this guy's getting open, if this guy's running his routes correctly, they don't even know. Right. Oftentimes for the fans,
like you could have a play call in your mind where, you know, receiver A is getting this ball in this route tree, but, you know, the quarterback reads something different and checks down to a different guy. And it's like, yeah. So it's not necessarily the offensive coordinator where the ball goes always.
Right. And I think what it falls back to is, and again, this is the vocal minority, but people are questioning, again, is Petras the guy, right? Is this falling on Petras? We don't see a lot of downfield throws. And my theory is this: last year, Petras struggled on the short throws. He was burning it into guys, right? He's obviously it. And for anyone wondering out there, this is just my opinion, former long snapper talking, but if you don't see improvement on Spencer's feet in the pocket, his pocket awareness, I'm not saying he's perfect or even good yet.
The way he runs the offense, the way the machine operates because of the conductor.
Yes. His touch and his accuracy this year, he's improved on everything. And if you don't see it, then you're trying to not look for it. But I have a theory that before you can be above average, you have to go through average to get there, right? And last year he was maybe a little below average, but right now he's just trying to make the short throws, right? He's trying to make the makeables. We probably heard that 100 grand times when we were in the program. Make the makeables, right? The dink and dunks, the 6 yard, the 3 yard, the 8 yard, occasionally the 12 yard to Laporta, right? On a very rare occasion right now, the Charlie Jones touchdown pass or the one to Nico late in the game yesterday, he's not going to go straight to air raid offense, throwing the deep ball. We have some, so it's a mixture of wide receivers' ability and what they're good at, how the Iowa offense is built at its core, and who we have at quarterback. There's a lot of people out there that are just like, I don't know. They're bored with Petras because he isn't great and they want to see what our other options are. you're just greedy. You're just a greedy fan. He's good enough. And that's my take on it.
We've beaten two top teams. We have one of the best resumes in the country. We're undefeated. We're only looking up. We're getting healthier. Like you or Kevin said it the other week that if you're not happy, you're trying to be unhappy.
Yeah.
Like as an Iowa fan, if you are unhappy about anything, it's because you're trying to be.
And you know what it is? I think it's the insecurity of a fan who sees the potential in the team, but knows that they just have no control and they just want to complain about something so that if it does somehow bite us in the ass, then they look smart, right? They look good at it because, oh, I've been saying it all year. Spencer's lost us the game. Like if we lose to Penn State or something, right? And they don't want to like, I think it's their insecurity of putting all their chips in and actually allowing themselves to be happy with where the program's at because they know shit, this could be a Big Ten championship year. So I don't know, man. It's a rough go.
I think Spencer gives us an opportunity to compete for a Big Ten championship.
Agreed.
I think what the offense does this year is completely dependent on the offensive line play,
which took a giant leap in this Kent State game.
Kevin couldn't be more right. I've been saying it since before the season even started. Iowa's entire season relies on the offense and defensive lines because that's how it's always been.
Mm-hmm. I also want to say again, just as a reminder, we played Indiana, who has a good defense and will prove to have a good defense over the course of the year, and Iowa State, who will probably prove to have a pretty good defense over the course of the year. So let's just remember that.
How many combined repetitions do all the other quarterbacks have put together
on our roster?
Yeah.
Padilla has had maybe 15 or 20 plays between last year and this
Spencer
year.
Has more starts than anybody else has repetitions played against a body in a Hawkeye uniform.
I think just
sit and ponder on that and understand what position we're in as a university and fans and alumni right now, because it is absolutely sweet.
Yeah. And I know that sometimes schools bring in a guy and it does, it works out, man. Like, oh my God, this guy is better than the starter was, but it doesn't happen very often. And the reason that people don't get replaced is because they get to see those guys. Like it's almost the audacity of you as a fan to almost like assume that the staff is holding back a guy that's better than who we're playing. Like, do you think that our staff doesn't want to win games? I'm a little confused with that logic. So
how large do you think this minority is, though? Because I feel like this has to be a small crowd, man.
I think that everybody has every single Iowa fan has a level of, I wish Petrus was better to
so you're talking
some
to
people
the voices in their heads.
Basically.
Oh, but you're talking to the schizophrenics. Now I like where we're talking headed with this episode.
I'm talking to the wild ones. I mean, even us, right? Like we know that he's not, you know, he's not a Heisman candidate. But I think for a lot of people, because he just doesn't give you anything super exciting, they think for some reason, like, well, maybe there's a chance that on the bench there is something super exciting. It's just like, probably not.
Well, I mean, what's the old saying? The most popular guy on the team is the second string quarterback.
Right.
There are people calling for Ruyak to be benched for years. There are people calling for CJ to get benched after a bad game.
Yeah.
For Nate to get benched. Like, so it's a story that's never going to end.
I do think that because in recent history with CJ, and it's a different situation because he was put in at the end of the year and then given the spot in the offseason where he then had the chance to go through spring ball as the starter, summer as the starter, camp as the starter. People see that we decided to go with CJ over I almost forgot his fucking first name, Jake Rudock. And they think, oh, well, CJ was better than Jake. And we played Jake over him for, I mean, how many games do you guys think realistically we played Rudock where CJ could have given us a better chance? I don't know if it really mattered.
I mean, I remember one particular in 2014, Jake was hurt and we put CJ in. CJ
didn't even play very well that game. It was against Purdue, I believe.
Right. It's like CJ did well and ended up working out over Rudock because he was given the official job in January. And then he had that whole off season to work in as the starter. So it's not the same thing. If CJ would have been given the job in 2014 at game 7, I don't know if he does all that great or better than Rudock does throughout the rest of that season. Right. It just, I don't know. And then you put the other guy in and now you're running the risk of like, okay, well now we have 15 games of experience sitting on the bench and we're just taking a chance. Like we're hoping that he's better and he has to be significantly better to make it worth it. Right. We're not just putting some guy in to like make one more throw. Like you guys are wanting a lot. You guys are wanting quantum leap here. Just not going to happen. So I think we've talked for an hour. I don't know. We'll preview.
Yeah, I think we're getting that whole narrative at like 20 minutes too much of our time.
Yeah, way too much. Colorado State, we'll preview them. I don't know how much there really is to preview, but we'll talk a little bit more about what the Big Ten is looking like on Thursday. But we got some Sunday night football to watch. And hope
you want some extra betting. I don't know how our extra Patreon bets went, if you wrote any of those down. Mm. But patreon.com//washupwalkons. I don't know if it's front or back.
This is, yeah, Drake and I, we're going to give them the full gambit this week. We're going to go all over every bet. And then I'm also going to do a little special teams breakdown. So there will be a couple Patreon extras. You guys are psychos again, donating to the hospital, all the good things you get on Patreon. Thank you so much for listening. This is episode 250. Can we make it to 500? We'd be halfway there. I don't know. We'll probably, something will happen by then. Who knows?
Between 250 and 500, we're getting rich and they're going to be really, really salty haters all around the state of Iowa when we're just donating tens of thousands of dollars to the hospital.
Yeah.
Between episode 250 and 500. Hell, there might be a washed up walk-ons wing in the next 250.
I was going to say there's going to be a Kulik
you wing. Sickos are behind us every step of the way. And we are just gaining more and more steam. And with that steam, we just gain more faith in you sickos, dude.
Yeah.
We're taking this place to the moon. This washed up walk-ons organization, LLC, is going to the moon. You guys are going with us. We're Elon Musk. And with that, all I have to say is Hawks by a million. Fuck the suits. You can't get us.